changes.
Yeah. You fucked it up.
I did.
By the time this comes out, we'll be late to the game, but we can't do a podcast without saying rest in peace to the Prince of Darkness,
R.I.P.
Mr. Osborne.
Crazy man.
Ozman.
We are all gonna miss Ozzy, I reckon. Mm. Not that he was capable of doing too much more anyways, but, you know, at least we have his beautiful reality show, which is what he's known for.
I actually liked it.
I just thought he was going to live forever.
Yeah, it's one of those ones where you think he's never going to die,
I just didn't think it would happen. Yeah.
But they did, Black Sabbath did that like farewell thing, and then
he died two days after.
I want to watch it.
Yeah.
Anyway. Enough about that. This is Gem Hunt, our family horror podcast. Each episode, we watch a movie with 5,000 votes or less on IMDb and discuss whether we think it's a horror gem or a turd or an old in-betweener. Sometimes they are. My name is Cody, and I'm afraid I told a bit of a fib.
I'm Beth. Oh, shit, you guys. I may need to go pee on the Alamo.
Woo!
I'm Buggy, and I don't like you.
Okay, here's an interesting announcement. This is the 30th episode of Gem Hunt. Nice work, everybody. I think I might have announced that on the last episode as well, but again, you know, worth celebrating.
We made it.
I know, I can't believe we made 30 episodes. Now I don't feel so bad about buying all of this gear for the podcast.
And we're making a fortune.
Yeah, we're making...
We're making bank.
Negative.
Yeah, with all the advertisements we're running.
Yes.
They're subliminal, you can't hear them. If you play them backwards, you can hear the ads. Anyway, just a reminder, we're going to take a short break after this episode for the month of August to do some behind-the-scenes work. Promo stuff, hopefully. Maybe make some stickers, posters. We don't know. Maybe get a website running.
Hell yeah.
Or maybe we'll just be at the beach. That's possible also.
Both things, they're not mutually exclusive. We can do both.
I guess not. Anything else we need to talk about before we get into this?
I don't think so. You got anything?
Not that I can think of.
We're going to go see the new Ari Aster. I don't think it's a horror movie, but I heard it's pretty good. So we'll report back on that. In a month.
The one person, I was talking to someone at work who said his girlfriend saw it at Cannes.
Oh.
And she didn't like it.
She would.
I'm like, well, yeah, so I'm excited. I'm excited about Joaquin and Pascal.
Heck yeah. Okay, we got a movie to review this evening that I selected. I gave a hint about it on the last episode. It's called Tin Can Man. This was made in 2007, but didn't really get a release until 2012. And it wasn't really properly out on DVD and whatnot until, I think, sometime around 2014. This was written and directed by Ivan Kavanaugh. He has another horror film that people seem to like a lot called The Canal. That came out in 2014, I believe, and I think we've seen it, but I just don't remember. So
that happens sometimes.
Might need to revisit it. This is starring Patrick O'Donnell as Pete, Michael Parle, I think it's Michael Parle as Dave.
I think that's what I'd say, but I don't know.
We're going with Parle.
Yeah.
Emma Eliza Regan as Mel, and there are multiple other people in this that aren't even listed on the goddamn IMDb page, so I don't know who they are.
True.
There's a guy that plays Pete's dad. He was an interesting guy.
Mm-hmm.
Not listed anywhere. I'm sure if I turned the credits on the DVD, I could see it, but I didn't write them down. The music and the composer was also Ivan Kavanaugh. I think he might have done everything on this movie.
Yeah,
go Ivan.
Where can you watch this son of a gun? This is on a thing called Midnight Pulp. It's on a Amazon channel called Cineverse, I believe. And it's on a YouTube premium channel called Con TV, supposedly. And we have a DVD that I got on eBay from Canada.
All right.
And that's how we watched it. Okay, let's talk about what this movie's all about. This is a film about poor old Pete. Pete is having a hard go of it at the start of this thing. First, he proposes to his girlfriend, who not only rejects his proposal, but tells him that she met someone else that she's in love with and who is way better than Pete in every way. So that's a major bummer. We then find out Pete has a shit job and a shitty boss who is on his case about his work performance and threatens to fire him if he doesn't start putting in more time and coming in on weekends and all that shit. So we have the classic setup for a film about a sad man whose life is falling apart. I saw one review that described Pete as a weak-willed, fairly spineless man.
Which accurate.
Which is an important detail because of what comes next, which is completely unexpected and out of the norm for a setup like this. So after all of Pete's unfortunate hardships, we join him as he's sitting alone in his dingy apartment watching TV, and suddenly there's a knock on the door. Pete opens the door to find a character named Dave, who will haunt Pete and us throughout the remainder of the film. Dave introduces himself as Pete's neighbor and asks Pete if he can use his phone as he has just been in an accident. Pete reluctantly agrees, which is a huge mistake, and Dave steps into the other room for a moment to make his call, supposedly. And upon returning, Dave engages Pete in conversation, which grows in intensity as Dave grills Pete with a series of questions. Finally, Dave admits that he hasn't been entirely truthful.
There's something I probably should tell you.
Well, maybe, you know, I could meet during the week and you could tell me because I'm knackered. I have so much work to do tomorrow. You wouldn't believe it.
It's about next door. I'm afraid I told a bit of a fib.
Oh, really? Oh, is he? He's a bit of a weirdo, is he? Next door, is he? Yeah, there are weirdos, isn't
there? I know there are, yes. Lots.
So, we're beginning to get a sense that this Dave guy is not only crazy, but also dangerous. And at this point, things really take a turn for the worst as Dave takes Pete next door to show him his dead neighbor laying in a bathtub. Mm-hmm. From here on out, Dave drags Pete through a series of nightmarish encounters, including a very unsettling visit to Pete's dad, a run-in with the titular Tin Can Man, which is horrifying, an extended hangout with Dave's family, who are all just as fucked up as he is, in a weird scene featuring a man with bleeding ears. Mm-hmm. And poor Pete seems to have, unfortunately, no ability to do anything about this. It's as if Dave has some unbreakable mental hold over him. There's some weird singing and dancing along the way. A very creepy clown shows up at some point. And as the story progresses, we're pulled deeper and deeper into this surreal nightmare, and the dream logic just gets thicker and thicker, and by the end, you won't know what the hell you just experienced. Sound about right?
Yeah.
Miss anything important? There's cake eating. There's some cake eating.
Yeah. Yeah, you got bleeding ears.
I think everything is just, like, added tidbits of weirdness related to the plot, but that's, like, I would say the nuts and bolts for sure.
Yeah, without any spoilerness.
Mm-hmm. Yep, definitely. So, this is an interesting film, shot in black and white. Apparently, Ivan Kavanaugh made it for under €1,000.
Wow. I saw that it was self-funded, whatever that means, but that's cheap.
Yeah, so he made this on next to nothing. It's definitely, you know, it feels like a low-budget film. It feels like an indie film. It doesn't feel like a film that somebody made for under €1,000. Mm-hmm.
What's the conversion?
I don't know. That's
it's like less than $1,000.
It's like $2 million.
Well, soon coming right? soon.
I think
actually,
euros are less
going.
Than American currency, but I'm not sure anymore.
They used to be more.
I thought so, but I don't know if any more they are, but they might be.
I don't know. Is Europe even a country anymore?
It's pretty close. It's $1.17. So you're right.
They're a little less.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or actually a little more.
A little more. Yes.
Now we know. Mm-hmm. Okay, so one thing I want to do first is acknowledge Michael Parle's performance as Dave, because he's really quite a menacing and intimidating character, right?
Yeah. He's good. Like, I was enjoying him. I was like, you know what? I want, like, a full Dave story about Dave's life.
I hate Dave. But he reminds me of, what's his name? The guy from Naked, who plays Lupin in the Harry Potter movies.
I don't know.
David Thewlis.
I like him.
He reminds me of him in a little bit of, man, names are not coming to me. One of my favorite character actors who is called...
Your mom.
Give me a second. Who's called your mom?
Nicolas Cage.
Nope. Oh, is this the new one? Nicolas Cage is going to show up in every fucking episode. John Hawks.
John Hawks. Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
I want like a full TV series about Dave and his family. That's what I want.
You would.
I want more information.
Oh, boy.
It's nice meeting you. It really is. Okay. I tell you what, you've got quite a strong grip for a small man.
I couldn't let go my hand.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
I didn't mean to.
No.
I don't know my own strength sometimes.
You're very.
I'm sorry about that.
No, it's fine.
No, I didn't mean to, honestly.
No, it's fine.
Are you okay?
Yeah, you're very nice. No, you're very sorry. Nice. Very nice. Yeah.
Honestly, I didn't mean to. Yeah.
They're cool.
So, they're cool?
They're fucked and cool. They're fucking cool.
Yeah.
A review of this film on Daily Grindhouse described the Dave character as the bastard child of Lost Highway's Dick Laurent and Trainspotting's Begbie, which I thought was kind of interesting. Yeah.
And then maybe the Irishness lends itself to the Trainspotting.
True, yeah. Oh, yeah, we should mention this is an Irish film. Mm-hmm. There aren't that many Irish horror films that I know of, so that's kind of interesting. But yeah, I don't think this film would have been as effective without that performance by Michael Parle.
He was great, and it definitely, yeah, like I was thinking more Blue Velvet kind of.
I agree, Dennis Hopper, like it was kind of giving.
But when
that.
You think about Lost, yeah, it's that kind of deal where it's like this guy shows up and you're just in his thrall and he's a monster and the main supposed
and you're
character.
Just like existing by his terms,
yeah, which is really scary to me too.
It is it's like a complete lack of power, like Pete feels entirely powerless throughout this entire film.
Definitely. Well, speaking of David Lynch and Blue Velvet and all of that, let's talk about some comparisons between this film and David Lynch's work, because I don't think we can talk about this without talking about Eraserhead, because feels very much in that vein.
Yeah.
The way it looks, the dream logic, the kind of I'm trapped in a nightmare feeling this movie gives you really feels like a nod to Eraserhead, right?
Yeah, and unlikable characters. And I haven't actually seen Eraserhead in a long time. You've never seen it. You need to see
it. Yeah. It's been a while for me, too.
A little bit rough, but I mean, so much comes from it.
The baby in Eraserhead got famous on TikTok one time, and everyone kept saying on TikTok, if you were the Eraserhead baby, I wouldn't kill you. Just cracking me up.
It has also, you know, the lead, you know, this is Pete
is
from,
Pete.
Yeah, it's Jack Nance, which that's fun to see him.
Oh, yeah.
You know, rip.
And then the character in this is named Pete.
Huh?
Yeah.
Is there a coincidence?
I don't think so.
Probably not.
Common name.
Yeah.
There's a couple other movies, too. I mean, you have more to say about Eraserhead? I think the black and white tips it to Eraserhead, even though, like, we're saying it has some, like, Blue Velvety. It's like the Frank.
Yeah.
Dave is kind of like Frank.
For sure. Yeah, that was on my notes, actually. And just real quick, so I mentioned this at the end of the last episode, but the tagline on the DVD calls this David Lynch by way of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And I think you can definitely see all those reference points in the film, but definitely wanted to talk about some other films, not just Eraserhead and Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and break this down a bit further. So here's an interesting another quote from this Daily Grindhouse article. The lead character in Tin Can Man bears a similarity to those of the lead characters in the likes of Blue Velvet or Lost Highway. Mm-hmm. As a relatively ordinary man is led into a dangerous, strange world that seems to be bubbling right beneath the surface of the reality of their lives. And I definitely felt like there was some Blue Velvet vibes in this, just kind of thinking about Kyle MacLachlan's character getting dragged into the seedy underbelly by Frank Booth, who, very much like the character Dave in Tin Can Man, is very intense and menacing and seems to be able to control people just by sheer will.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely Fear. Blue Velvet vibes, just in terms of how the story unfolds.
Mm-hmm. But Kyle MacLachlan's character is likable.
That's true. Yes.
And Pete is not likable. That's I agree.
Yeah. Pete is like, and that's sack one of potatoes. I mean, we'll get into that later, but it's like one, I read this critique of it. I think it's the same article you're talking about, that he's not someone you can root for or readily identify
with. He kind of reminds me of Bo. That's like something that he kind of like Bo's afraid.
Yeah,
he kind of
sure.
reminds me of that because mm-hmm. I was thinking the entire thing. That's why I was wondering if Dave is a supernatural type of entity or if he's just a regular man.
Interesting.
Because I was thinking, like, if I were Pete, wouldn't I at least try to like get one hit in? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. especially when it dives into Pete's family being involved. Like, I feel like if I were Pete, I know him and his dad have kind of a strange relationship, as we could see later. Like, yeah. it's kind of weird and estranged. But I think that would be the moment where I'd be like, because Pete even says when he's at his dad's house, because there becomes sort of a conflict, you know, of like, if I don't do what Dave wants, Dave's going to hurt my family. Pete even says, like, you have to kill me if you want to kill anyone that I care about. Where I'm like, if you feel that strongly, why wouldn't you just try to stop Dave? At least at one point.
Yeah, just like Bo, he's kind of a no agent. So this reminds me also of Abruptio a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Even the beginning, like, it's like his job sucks. Yeah. His girlfriend breaks up with him. He's this real loser to the point where you're like, I don't give a shit about you because you don't.
Also, his girlfriend's response to him proposing is crazy.
It's like maybe they weren't even
dating.
It's
like the worst she can say is no. No, the worst she can say is she's found a better man who fucks better.
Yeah,
and that is a crazy response to a proposal.
Yeah.
Kind of feel bad for Pete on that one. Like, that is a crazy response.
Yeah. Well, you feel bad for him to start. I mean, it's the same way I kind of felt about the Abruptio character. It's like, you feel bad for him, but then you're like, oh my God, you fucking loser.
We'll get it together.
And I think you're supposed to. I don't think it's like he was supposed to be
likable.
No, likeable.
His girlfriend did him so dirty because that was a crazy thing to say.
No, I did see one article where it was like, it makes you question whether he had the wrong, like, they weren't even really dating or something.
Right.
Like, yeah, it was he like had the wrong idea.
Casual.
Yeah.
Or, you know. There's also, in terms of movies, it's reminiscent of, there's a like home invasion element.
Yeah.
Kind of reminded me of Funny Games.
Exactly.
Oh,
yeah. A little bit. Like, just.
Yeah, it has a hint of that.
In a specific way. Yeah. Cause it's not playing on the same idea as Funny Games is, but it kind of feels like the world is bending to this like person's.
And
will.
I still haven't seen that movie because this is something
what
I actually
fuck,
I know. I just
it's fair. It's
you know,
really it's
home
pretty brutal.
Invasion and torture are things that I actually don't like.
You wouldn't like it.
But then one other really like quick. It also reminded me of Darren Aronofsky's Mother a little bit.
Oh, that's kind of interesting.
Just that idea of, because it gave me a similar feeling where you're just like, no, 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 the whole time. Mm-hmm. Like, as it, that had a lot more, you know.
Yeah.
That got weirder and bigger in
different
ways.
Is that the
ways.
One with, what's her name and Javier Bardem?
Jennifer Lawrence.
Yes.
Love Hewitt.
Jennifer Love Hewitt.
Cameo by, no, Michelle Pfeiffer's in it, but it is like a person, people, God,
people, it's people
come in. Oh yeah, because it's a couple. They come into someone's house and they just like
violate,
yeah,
completely.
They just take over and steamroll, and that's what Dave's doing.
Dave is, yeah,
for sure. And to kind of circle back to the scene where they go to see Pete's dad,
mm-hmm.
I think in terms of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, this was the scene that kind of really
the
gave me those
stuff.
Vibes.
Yeah.
Just, you know, it wasn't. It was a different kind of scene than the classic dinner scene in Texas Chainsaw Massacre, but just like the intensity and the weird vibes of it really reminded me of that for some reason.
Mm-hmm. That and the family reunion too, definitely.
They
just
have actually
that like
scary.
Unsettling
mm-hmm.
like manner.
Yeah.
And you said, ugh, go away. What did you say that to her? Did she know that all he wants is to be a singer, Michelle?
I didn't.
Yeah, I used to be a good singer.
Good.
I used to be pretty good.
Are you?
I used to be pretty good.
You wouldn't
good.
Sing us a song, would you?
Oh, I could sing anything you want to sing.
Can you?
Yeah, what was you like?
I don't know. Let me see. Who's your favourite singer?
It's a shame because of an alcoholic. That's what it is.
No.
There's nothing else about...
No, I don't believe that for
yes,
a moment.
Yes, yes.
I don't. Pete, you're not ashamed of your father, are you?
He is ashamed,
Richard. It's not, Pete, you're not ashamed, are you?
He always will be.
He's not ashamed. Pete, you're not ashamed.
You know what
he's
saying, he's not.
Tell him that you're not ashamed, Pete. Tell him.
I'm not ashamed.
You are ashamed.
I'm telling you, Pete. Tell him. Tell him you're not ashamed, Pete.
I'm not ashamed.
He is ashamed.
He's not ashamed.
He is ashamed.
He isn't. He just said it.
I tell you, he's ashamed.
He's not. He just said he's not. You're not ashamed of your father, are you? He's not ashamed.
He's ashamed of me.
He's not, Pete. You're not ashamed of your father, are you?
You sit down.
Pete, you're not a great singer,
isn't he? Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Sit down. Stand up. Sit down. Stand up. Sit down. Stand up. Sit down. Stand up. Sit down.
What a great man, Pete.
I'm sure there's like something we're going to talk about, like if this is the scariest thing. There's were some scary scenes
we'll
in
get
this
to that.
Movie for sure.
Personal fears.
I just wanted to note this one thing. Ivan Kavanaugh had this to say in an interview from Complex discussing his 2014 film, The Canal. He said, "I saw the Texas Chainsaw Massacre at the cinema. For me, that was the closest to being in a waking nightmare I'd ever been. It was just an all-out assault on the senses, and I came out dazed." So
that's, yeah, how we all, the first time you saw it, don't you think that's, yeah.
I just thought it was really cool.
Yeah. He talks a lot about other directors in that interview as well. He notes Kubrick's The Shining as an influence, as well as the films of Brian De Palma. And one thing I found interesting is that the interviewer noted that The Canal had Eraserhead vibes, and Kavanaugh responded that he was using an approach where you don't know if you're in the character's head or not. So he kind of like, I feel like, carried this concept from Tin Can Man into his next horror film a little bit.
Maybe where he had like a bigger budget or more people had seen it and he had... That also, I saw something that on this movie, the actors didn't have the full script.
Oh, that's interesting.
They had like their scenes, so they didn't actually know where it was going, which might, that might kind of add to the kind of chaotic feeling.
Yeah. Just can you imagine acting with that Dave character and not knowing exactly what the lines were going to be or like what he was going to say or do? That could be actually scary.
I'm anti-Dave.
I like Dave as a character, but I would cry if anyone like that was near me, for sure. Like, I would genuinely... I would freak out.
Yes, that's why I'm saying, like, this is like actually the shit that actually scares me. And one other thing I saw, speaking of like movies that it might be like kind of an homage to, I saw one person saying that maybe even the beginning like setup of "I need to use your phone, there's been an accident" might be a nod to Clockwork Orange.
Oh, I saw that too. Yeah,
but that might be a stretch because I think it's kind of a common in like what else,
right?
Why would you need to use it?
There's many films that I think are like, you know, doing something related to that. If like, I just need to go in here really quick, I'll be right out.
Dave is a little Alex is a chaos agent the way
There's this movie, a Spanish movie called The Uninvited Guest, and the whole premise is this guy shows up at this dude's house and he asked to use the phone and he lets him in and the guy disappears into the house.
Oh, that's so scary.
And he's pretty sure that the guy is just in the house, but he can never find him.
Oh my
god. For like a long, it's not just like a night. It's like for like
a
permanent
time.
Yeah. It's pretty amazing.
That sounds cool.
Yeah.
But terrifying.
I mean, yeah, totally. This is the stuff, not that I'm super paranoid
or
anything.
Well, that does happen. That does happen to people. Not often, but there's like urban legends mixed with
like
reality.
Living in the ceiling.
Well, there was this one that was true where this woman was living in like this crawl space in some guy's house and she was like, would climb down, and he found out because the refrigerator was open.
This is the
one,
I was
night,
thinking of.
And he had a camera, so like you can see her coming in and out. But it was like some innocent, like genuinely, like
she was just poor.
She was just trying to hide, and she wasn't trying to hurt anybody. You know, and still not great. She broke into someone's house, but it wasn't like ominous reasons. It was just like, I need food, and I'm gonna hide in here for a while.
Yeah, I don't know why I'm like not a big, you know, I get in trouble for not always locking the doors and stuff.
I don't know
why
you do that.
So I'm not a real paranoid about it, but for some, it's just like this kind of psychological horror is what really scares me. And I saw also that the director said, or writer director said, it was kind of based on living in a city in an apartment and not knowing your neighbors.
Okay.
And like the fear
of who are your neighbors? What are they up to? I mean, that is just also living in an apartment. You don't know who you're living next to.
Yeah. The actual quote is something, there's something scary about modern city living, which I gotta say, I feel safer in this. We've talked about this. Like, I feel way safer in the city than in, well, like the fucking country, but in the suburb. I think everyone in the suburbs is depraved, and I'm sorry to everyone that's suburban.
They get bored.
That's boredom breeds, you know, stabbing.
It does. Put that on a t-shirt.
I like stabbing. I think that's a line from the movie.
Yeah. Yes, it is.
And then they ultimately bash somebody's brains in instead of stab them. But anyways, you mentioned sort of the psychological horror element of this, and I thought it would be fun to play the old subgenre game and talk about this, because I'm not sure exactly where to place it. Obviously, there's some elements of home invasion, like you noted.
Mm-hmm.
I think it dabbles in torture porn a bit. But then we have this dream logic, surreal nightmare, Eraserhead vibe. So I don't know, what do you think? Where would you, like, if you had to pick one or one or two, what would you say? Where does this fit in the spectrum of horror?
I'd say surreal, or probably home invasion. Because while I think there is like an element of torture, I do think in comparison, and maybe this is just based off of me and like some of the movies I've seen, I didn't feel like it was overkill on the torture department. Like, there was some very like kind of unsettling scenes that had to do specifically with like the Tin Can Man thing going on.
Oh boy.
But I didn't, you know, like see any like long overdrawn, like here's someone's skin getting ripped off, stuff like that, where to me that's torture porn.
Yeah. But I think I would say when it comes to horror movies or movies, well, horror movies, because like action movies are my least favorite kind of movies, but torture porn and home invasion are my two least favorite subgenres. So I think that has made it a difficult watch for me, but you're right. Like, compared to,
cause I don't think that was the goal automatically, was to be like, we're going to show torture and make you really uncomfortable.
I think it was more meant to be weird
and like, trippy and psychological
and in your head. Yeah. What do you think, Cody?
I would put it somewhere between psychological horror and maybe home invasion.
Mm-hmm. It's not even just in the home. Like, they go around.
That's what's so, that's why it's hard to go like
somewhere with someone. That's fucking,
it's not like, it's not your classic home invasion, but it's not a home invasion, like one home being invaded, but it does feel like an invasion of multiple spaces wherever they happen to show up. So in that sense, I guess you could still maybe call it that.
It's like a life invasion.
Life invasion.
It is. It's, I mean, I think you can technically call it a home invasion because that's how it starts. That's how we get to the rest of the plot.
Somebody comes into somebody's sacred private space and won't leave.
Just as weird.
But then I want to get the secondary location, the Mulaney, you know.
Secondary location.
Don't go to the secondary location.
And guess where Pete goes? To multiple.
A tertiary location.
He goes like four.
Quaternary.
Quaternary. I don't know if that's places. Right.
I can't remember.
Yeah. But yeah, I think, it's more like a home invasion, but more like your sphere being invaded or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're dragged I don't know, which that's Blue Velvet. Yeah. I feel like
being dragged into these, like strange alternate
fucked up. And a lot of David Lynch movies, like, kind of normal-ish person gets dragged into this like
very abnormal scenario
of their city or town or whatever.
Yeah. Okay. So we have a weird, surreal, psychological home invasion type deal. Sphere invasion. I want to talk a little bit just about the style. We've mentioned a little bit about this, but just to touch on some key elements. Like we said, it's black and white. It's super high contrast. The way the characters are framed is very tight. You're like right up in their faces. Mm-hmm. I know you had some notes about kind of like the faces versus the sets. And...
Oh, just even like reading that thing the director said about like modern city living. I'm like, it's this movie is mostly face. Like, I mean, there's bodies too, but you barely even have a sense of what the backdrop is, which that could be like a really smart use of a low budget.
Mm-hmm.
But there's so many close-ups of faces and so much like uplight. I don't know what you call that. Like lit from underneath.
Yeah.
The lighting is part of the style. The lighting is like another character. I mean, the lighting is like.
Yeah, the lighting is pretty effective and.
And cool and weird and old, almost like old school, like almost like, I wouldn't go all the way back to like silent movies, but sort of, right? Like it's like. Yeah. That's what they had to work with. And
there's some very dramatic, like facial.
Dramatic
things.
Is a good word yeah. for it. Yeah.
Yeah. I saw several reviews that referred to this film as claustrophobic, which I think is an apt description. It definitely feels like you're.
There's my other fear.
Yeah. Trapped in this small space with a very terrible person.
Ugh,
that you can't get rid of.
Actual nightmare. Yeah.
It's pretty gnarly.
Okay. Here's a fun idea. So as we discussed, this is a very nightmarish, surreal film. It's got that psychological angle for sure. But what does it all mean? I'm curious about whether y'all picked out any themes or specific details that felt meaningful or helped to explain what it was the filmmaker may have been trying to get across or say with this film. So it does feel like it may be trying to say something beyond just being... It doesn't feel weird for weird's sake. Like, it feels like it has a little more depth to it, I think. But I wasn't 100% sure on how to interpret it.
Well, I guess there's that modern city living quote, which that doesn't really... I don't know. I feel
think
like...
it's weird to be weird.
Yeah, I kind of feel like it's, like, weird to be scary, and that is effect. Like, it's like, I'm going to make a movie that scares the shit out of people, and in that way... It was effective. Like the DVD had extras, but it was really just like audience reaction.
Yeah.
And that was mostly the ones that were in it. Who knows what other people said. It was everyone saying it scared the shit out of them.
Well, it's unsettling. And I do think there might be like a greater point potentially, but I don't think it's like a commentary on like anything greater. Maybe it is a commentary on like strangers and living in the city, or like potentially a perception of what that could be like. But I felt like if it's making a statement, it's really all centered around Pete and Pete as a person and Pete's like ambitions. Because in the very beginning of the film, Pete talks about being an actor, and at the very mm-hmm. end of the film, that's repeated.
Mm-hmm.
Where I'm not sure if it's a greater commentary on Pete as a character, if it's about like wanting more but not being willing to do anything about it, or something like that, about like, you know, speaking about mediocrity and how it's kind of like your own choice. I don't know. There's like enough confusing shit where I'm like, I don't know if we're supposed to come out of this feeling anything other than just like, whoa, that was pretty weird. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I didn't do any like background research because I'm not smart like you guys. I didn't do any scholarly research. So I'm not sure if like the director made comments himself about the film.
I saw that thing I said
I didn't see a lot of comments from him specifically about this movie, other than that one interview he did talking about his other movie, but he only briefly mentioned this. So
maybe it's like claustrophobic. Literally as a like exploration of being claustrophobic in your fucking life.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that too, because I just think like it kind of reminds me of the same thing with like Beau is Afraid, where it's just about like a character who is not really likable going through a very traumatic experience. And, you know, there's like things going on with them. Usually those characters are very unhappy in their lives. And I don't know if it's making a greater thing of like, Pete, you know, you felt pretty shitty before. How do you feel now? Or like what?
Yeah, what do you think? Did you like take any greater meaning from it?
Well, I a couple things occurred to me that I haven't fully wrapped my mind around. But I was thinking there's sort of this element of mundane life beating you down and just being kind of spineless and going along with it. And to some extent, maybe Dave is just like an exaggerated version of this. You know, at first I thought it was going to be one of those things where like he is maybe trying to like pull some kind of inner motivation out of Pete, but no, I don't think that's the case. It turns out to just be, you know, an onslaught.
But I could see that because there's multiple instances where he's asking Pete to do something and Pete is utterly incapable and he keeps being like, come on, like, are you, I mean, he says like a pussy, but like, you know, he's saying like, are you that weak? Like, can you not do this? Like with multiple different things. Where I could see that being a possible interpretation.
Dave is capitalism.
I could, I mean, I might, that might be crazy to like make that statement, but I kind of think so. Like, I could see that because they're
modern.
He's always pushing Pete to do something, whether it's killing somebody or singing a song. Like, it's like a constant onslaught of like, why can't you do this?
Yeah.
Oh, speaking of songs, that is another thing that's Lynchy, is there's some like bizarre singing and dancing, and we should make sure to make a note of that.
The next thing on on my interpretation notes here is, you know, the singing and dancing seem to be kind of central. It was almost a lot of times used as almost a humiliation or something, but it comes back and again throughout the storyline.
Now, I'm going to sing a little song. You know my little tune, didn't you? Up you get. Come on now, give us a little show. You're going to like this. La 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 la. Come on now, I want to have a dance here. Come on. Come on.
Humiliation is another great, like, claustrophobia. Sure. That is, I think, an important, like, this character already has a shit life, and then he's just, like, fully debased.
Well, he's being demanded
and
to perform.
Too.
Yeah.
You know, and again, like, I think that you're right on the money with that, Cody. There's, like, such an emphasis, at least, of him repeating a couple of times at how he wanted to be an actor and how he wanted to be someone greater. Where I could see that being like a definite like plot line.
Yeah. And then I was also kind of trying to decipher potentially what the Tin Can Man might represent, which, as we noted, is it's a very scary scene when that guy pops
unsettling.
Up. But here's a little interesting quote from the Worldwide Celluloid Massacre. It says, the Tin Can Man himself is a Kafkaesque symbolic scarecrow character. A man run down by life, family, and society, and made to dance, only here he assumes flesh and blood. Which I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting.
Scarecrow-like,
Yeah, a little bit.
I mean, I could see that, because it does seem like, at least with the Dave character, he's like looking for someone to perform actively, like consistently. He's looking for someone to do something for him or to act in a certain way. And behave a certain way, right? I could see that.
Yeah, and so we go like, okay, your dreams to be an actor, how far would you like sell your soul kind of like in the pursuit of that dream?
Or just do you even have it? Like that's I think the thing that's been constantly tested with Pete's character is like, can you even do it?
Up to you too. Like,
can you do this? Can you do that?
This is just sort of like a modern archetype, right? Like the idea that, you know, we're all sort of like, not soulless, but sort of just like, well, I gotta do this.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna do
it. Well, mindless. Yeah. We're like little zombies. You know, we don't have our own like opinions or like we can't like defend ourselves.
Just TikToking the day away.
Yeah.
Just gotta show up and do our podcast every other week. Can't not.
Dragging that.
That's all we do.
Cody's got us chained to the couch over here.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah.
With tin cans.
Ooh, don't say that.
I know. I feel like this is a movie that could make you have nightmares.
Yeah. It is a nightmare. It's a waking
nightmare.
Yeah,
it is a nightmare. It does feel that way, yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of nightmares, here's the big question. Is this the scariest movie we've watched during our gem hunt run? Is there anything that tops it, you think, in terms of just pure terror? Because I feel like a lot of the movies we've watched have been fun, but weren't necessarily scare the shit out of you type movies.
No, or not like intentionally serious, I think is like a main thing. I would say Savage Land.
I would go there too.
That might, because that was also a movie that's supposed to be serious, where this one I think is supposed to be serious.
Yeah, which that's hard for me sometimes. It isn't tempered by much. It's scary. I think it's one of those ones, at least for me, and I've already, I'm like beating a dead horse, but it happens to strike at my personal fears, right. Which is like the claustrophobic thing. And I don't like torture and I don't like home invasions. So maybe for me, this one did. I think I was like grabbing Cody's arm and going like, no, more than I have in any other movie.
I think there are also some like very effective things in this movie. Like there's two things I've been thinking about. Just in terms of unsettlingness, where like when Dave first comes into Pete's apartment and he's taking his phone call in the hallway and he's just fucking laughing.
Yeah.
Like that scared me. And I was thinking about like, what would you do if you were Pete? Like you're hearing this guy just laughing maniacally in your apartment after you let him take a phone call. That's fucking scary. And then the other thing I thought about was there's when you kind of are introduced to Dave's family, he has his two daughters and they're sort of like huddled up together, like laughing and talking about buying a cake. And then there's the mother just sort of sitting there like leering in the corner and she looks so like weird and like uncomfortable. I'm very fascinated. I think my favorite character is the mom.
Yes,
I'm like very interested, where I think this movie definitely, like in terms of every movie we've seen thus far on the show, really maintained an extremely uncomfortable atmosphere the entire time. Like there was not a moment where I was like, ooh, until it was over. There's no reprieve. It was just very much like, I know this is not gonna go well and I don't like, this sucks. Like it just keeps getting like progressively more uncomfortable.
Yeah, that's true. I think once it starts ramping up, it doesn't really let off.
No, it's just very like unrelentingly like uncomfortable. Like I was uncomfortable the whole time I was watching
it. Me too. What do you think? Scarier? Any scarier?
I think that it might be the scariest film we've reviewed for this. I think Savage Land was a really scary concept. I wouldn't say that it like really scared me, but I feel like this movie had an intensity to it that was like hard to brush off once the movie was over.
Yeah, for sure. I had to watch a bunch of happy stuff last night to make myself feel a little better.
I just did some reading after watching it.
Like I need something to cleanse my palate.
One comment either from just a normal person, or maybe it was a critic review where it was like, I watched this when I was in a bad mood and I was having a bad day, and it was kind of perfect because I was like, afterwards, I was like, oh, it's not so bad.
But right.
Like, at least that's, you know,
don't watch this if you're having a good day because it's going to ruin it.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like, be in a bad mood when you see a movie like this.
And we were kind of like ramping up to a stressful week when we watched it. So, I think I did have a little of that. Yeah, it could always be worse.
Yeah, you could meet Dave, you know? Yeah.
Just what if somebody knocked on our door right now?
Oh my don't. God. Somebody.
No one answer the fucking door. No one answer the fucking door.
Yeah,
that's why I wasn't scared, because I said to myself, I don't answer the door when people knock.
And we got a big dog.
Oh, yeah, because Albert would be able to defeat Dave.
He's loud, though.
Be so for real.
Dave would be like, I'd go to the next house now.
Yeah. Yeah, there's some, I mean, just some of the dialogue alone in this movie is scary. You know, the whole opening monologue with Dave talking about, you know, he has this whole bit about something about a knife.
It is. Yeah. He has this monologue about how you don't need a big knife. You just need a tiny one.
I don't know what you're trying to, say here.
Okay. There's this friend of mine, you see. Very nice man. I met him. He was an old gentleman when I met him. From Glasgow. Do you know where Glasgow is? In Scotland?
Yeah.
He'd been in the army. Been around a bit. Born on the rough streets in Glasgow. Very tough streets there.
Yeah.
They used to call him a bit of a knife man. Do you know what a knife man is? I didn't. Till I met him. And he was telling me, do you know all them young fellas, he said? Do you know all them young fellas? Going around with them big knives. As if they're going to kill the whole world. Do you know what he told me? Do you know what he told me? He said, you don't need a big knife like that. You only need a little, little knife. Just like that. You see that? You see?
Yeah.
You see that? And then he said, you just get it like that. And you dig it in there! Boom! Around the car. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
And that was unsettling. I was like, is Dave going to stab Pete? Right, like, now. Where is this going?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty fucked up. Okay, I think I'm at the end of all of my bullet points. Anybody got anything to add before we do some business?
Let's get to
the business. No, I think everything else will be like my post-whatever reflection.
Thoughts and feelings.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, real quick, obscurity rating on this fuckface. We got 180 IMDb votes, which I think is the second lowest on our list of reviewed films.
I wonder how much of that has to do with it being Irish.
And also never really having a distribution.
And black and white. Yeah. People are pretty averse.
It, like, it got filmed earlier and then like eventually got released like 5 years later?
It didn't get distribution until like 2014, I think.
Yeah, I think it played some festivals in 2012, but didn't really get put out in the world until 2014. So, yeah. Okay. IMDb critics 13, Rotten Tomatoes review, big fat one. And this is available on three places, and you can track down DVDs here and there. So, all in all, on our rating scale, the obscurity is 7.
Oh, wow.
Okay. I think we've had 3 7s in a row, actually.
Yeah, we've had
What does
some...
it mean?
I don't know.
Seven,
that's
seven,
like,
seven.
That's God's number or something, I think.
That's not God's number. God damn it. It's an angel number.
Oh.
Is this a goddamn?
There's angel multiple number. Angel numbers.
Hmm.
Okay.
Okay, let's do that thing that we do.
Oh, God. Okay.
We're going to close our eyes. We're going to count to 3. We're going to do a thumbs up or a thumbs down, and we'll see where we land.
For the 30th time.
Actually,
I'm still scared.
This is only the 29th.
For the 29th time.
We've watched
because of the fucking Adult infomercials.
We did 2 Adult Swim infomercial episodes, but then we also did 1 doubleheader, so that counts as 2 movies.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Yeah, which is why we're at a funny 29 number there. Okay, here we go. We're going to vote on the count of 3. 3, 2, 1.
Oh, shit.
I knew that was going to happen.
Shit! I didn't know that was going to happen.
Shit! I thought I was going to be the only one.
Oh, that's funny. Okay.
No way.
Here's the reveal. We had 2 up, 1 down.
Reasonable.
Which I was... I kind of had a feeling that there was an outside chance that it could have been mostly all the way down. I kind of changed my mind at the last minute.
That's
about,
what I thought.
And yeah. I will say I'm the down, so maybe I'll go first about why. I think maybe you guys are right. My main thing about this movie is I did not enjoy it.
Fair.
Much like sense. Silent Hill 2, it was not
fun. It was not fun.
It was not fun.
I understand.
Like, I like to watch horror movies to be scared a little bit, but also to have a good time.
Mm-hmm.
It, as I've said multiple times, hit on like a bunch of my worst fears.
Yeah.
And it didn't like pay off for me in a way like it made me disturbed, sad, and unsettled. I guess that's the same as disturbed. The one thing I will say is I did think, so it was 83 minutes long. I think it ended when it was supposed to, which a lot of times that's something that can sway me toward. I mean, I feel like so much of the time, I feel like movies are 10 minutes too long and that's what makes me not like them. But I think this did a really good job of being like, here's your nightmare. This is the place to cut it. We're cutting it. So
that's
I think
good.
Like the craft and everything was pretty impressive, especially low budget, the lighting, the acting, the music was really weird.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
But I just, did not enjoy myself. And that's why.
Fair enough.
Valid. I liked it. I think I liked it because it left me with so many questions. And I like when a movie does that. And there were so many random, unique things I appreciated. Like, we brought up the guy with his ears bleeding. Do you guys remember that lady who was there also in the house saying a bunch of stuff? Like, there was just so many random tidbits in that movie where I was like, give me more. And
does
like
it the have, it gets a little Harry Cruz, like, do you it, feel a little does, Harry Cruz like, vibes?
But the weird the family, I'm obsessed with the mom. There's like this scene where the mom just like tells Pete, like, I don't like you. I'm gonna burn you. And there was something about that where I was like, I love this movie. That is so funny. So I think I liked it, and I almost feel like hypocritical because there's been a couple of movies I've been like no to where I've been like, I like this concept and I really think it's cool. But that's how I felt about this movie, is maybe there's a lot of imperfect aspects to it. And I understand also it's not a movie for everybody. It's not a payoff movie. It's not a movie that makes you feel good. But I also thought it was good they made Pete kind of an unlikable character, because it sort of inevitably makes what happens to him less sad to you and more like intriguing. I'm like, what is the happening at the end? You know, what is the Tin Can Man? What are these people who like, how do we get here? What is Dave? And there were just so many unique things like that where I was like, it has enough for me to say I like it.
You should make some Dave fan fiction.
I don't want to make Dave fan fiction, but I want to make mom fan fiction.
Okay, you should make some mom.
I want not my mom, but this mom. I want to know more about her. I'm going to make her backstory.
I mean, yeah.
Because she's interesting and she likes to set fire. I don't think that's the first time either, because the girls were too excited about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably not. Oh, I think
stories behind
that. People have done a lot of terrible things multiple times.
And I want to know more.
Okay, write it.
Yeah. So I think, knowing that this movie was made for such a low budget and that Ivan Kavanaugh essentially did most of the work himself, I think it's really impressive how effective the film is, because it's so easy to just have a good concept but not be able to execute it with such little resources. And the fact that this was as kind of traumatic and gets under your skin in the way that it did, I just think that's kind of remarkable for how little went into it, you know?
There's some like less is more and also some more is more. Absolutely. Like at the right, you know, in the right proportion.
I agree.
Yeah. I think it looks really cool. Just the intense lighting in the black and white was kind of perfect for this. It added to that claustrophobic feeling. It's not perfect, however, as we've all noted. You know, I think there were some sound issues that I don't think were purposeful. Some of them were. Definitely the sound design was cool, and it was meant to be kind of weird and maybe garbled at places. But there are definitely things where I was like, I just don't think he quite had the chops or the resources to like nail the sound on in this whole thing. But that's okay. That's a minor thing. But
as a sound guide, I'm imagining that getting dialogue to be like the right, I bet it's hard.
Yeah, I think it is hard, especially if, you know, if you're working with a limited budget. A lot of times you need to go back in and have everybody redub all of their stuff.
And if you don't have the money to do like a bunch of takes of every scene.
Exactly. So yeah, no, it's definitely not easy, but I thought he pulled this off well. And like you said, it is a feel-bad movie. Yes. It isn't fun, but I like being upset sometimes.
Me too.
And I like being actually scared. And it's been a while since I've seen a movie where I was like, holy shit, that's actually kind of scary.
I was kind of impressed, which I was surprised by. Like, I think that's why I ended up being like, I'm going to thumbs this up. Because I was impressed overall.
Yeah. And I think more people should see it if you're into this kind of weird, surreal nightmare stuff and you want to have a traumatic experience.
Yeah, you should do
I just don't think a lot of people know about this, just because it never really got a very strong distribution. Barely anywhere.
Yeah, I think well done. I'm impressed too, but I just don't.
It's just not your vibe.
No, I really don't like torture.
It's uncomfortable too.
And it wasn't the most, and obviously there's some, like, I finally watched Martyrs and I get why.
Well, that's like a really good movie though.
Yes. It takes a really it takes something for me to accept this kind of feeling.
That movie's awesome.
Like, it's got a really, yeah.
Did you like Martyrs?
Yes, but I'll never watch it again.
That's fair.
Yeah. Martyrs is one of those movies where it's hard to say I like this, but you also can't deny its power.
It's pretty yeah. good.
Power is a good
it's
word.
It's just ultimately it. Satisfying, too. That's my opinion.
Yeah. It has a little more payoff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, we did our business on the Tin Can Man here.
We did it, y'all.
We did our big one.
Clock it.
Yeah.
Well, now I'm saying Clark it, which is hard. It's the like kids too chronically online. No, it's like some Love Island shit. Shout out Love Island. There's this girl named Clark, and everyone's been saying Clark it.
Well, I'm never going to say that.
Clark it.
Okay, well, with that, it's now time for special time. And as I noted, since this is our 30th episode, I thought it would be kind of fun to do a little look back. And to accomplish that, I came up with a fun little idea. I would like us to name our five favorite movies that we've reviewed for Gem Hunt. As we said earlier, we've reviewed 29 movies now, and surely there were gems and turds in the mix throughout all 29 of those. So let's do a little recap of some of our favorites. So we can each do five. Do you want to do one each and go around, or should we just each do our list?
I feel like we should each do our list, and we should do it in the order that we pick movies. So like Cody, Buggy, me.
Okay.
What do you think about that? Or do you want to?
Okay.
Because I just want to see how
she wants to be last.
No, I don't want to be last. I have mine written down. I want to see how much overlap there is.
Okay.
Yeah, no, that is a good point. And I'm curious about that too.
Yeah, Buggy was trying to tell me hers ahead of time. I was like, shut the fuck up.
Well, and I was thinking out loud. Then she beat me.
And then I ripped
her hair. She curb stomped me.
Yeah, I did.
Okay, I'll do mine. Here we go. Done. Heart of Midnight, the very first movie we watched. Retribution, Savage Land, Mirror Mirror, and Colobus, I think, are the ones that stood out to me the most. I have some honorable mentions. I'll save those until after we
Yeah, I have some honorable mentions, too, because okay. I found out I was allowed to do that.
Mine's, I'm going to have to, like, scroll because I forgot, like, half of the movies we did, but I'm glad I looked because I'm going to say Alucarda.
Okay.
That's going to be one of them.
Right.
Spider Baby. It's just, I'm biased. I was like laughing because my list before was just all my movies.
I mean, that's commit to your.
They're all mine. Mad Monster Party, aww, which is also mine. And then I am going to say Welcome to Arrow Beach. Whoa. I really, really liked that movie.
That's the fun.
And is that four?
Yes.
Yep. Okay, cool. And then I'm going to say, I think I'm going to say Sundown. That was also a really fun one for me.
Interesting list. Okay.
Okay. Spider Baby.
Yeah.
Savage Land. The Mafu Cage.
That was cool.
That might be just all about Carol Kane's hair. Body Melts.
Oh, yeah.
I was going to say that one.
And then Sundown, The Vampire in Retreat.
That one was very fun.
I might need a reminder on yours, Cody. I want to know the overlap.
Okay. Yeah. Mine were Heart of Midnight, Retribution, Savage Land, Mirror Mirror, and Colobus. I'm surprised that you didn't have Savage Land on your list.
That's honorable mention.
Okay, I thought for sure that would go
somewhere. Because
that
is, I think, the scariest one we've done. And I really liked that movie.
I thought that maybe that was going to be the one we all had on our list for sure. Okay.
No, there isn't anything that we all had. Right?
You guys both had you both had Savage Land. I just didn't.
Yeah, but not all. There's nothing that all three of us did.
No. Yeah, that's interesting.
I bet honorable mentions will kind of clean it up.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll start with my honorable mentions. Poor Pretty Eddie. The Attic Expeditions, and Spider Baby. I almost put Spider Baby in my top five, but then I remembered that it broke the rules, and so it's
That's very fair. We picked the one that broke the rules. I'm going to say Savage Land for sure. And there was one you just said. What were your honorable mentions again, Cody?
Poor Pretty Eddie. And the Attic Expeditions.
I'm going to say Savage Land and Poor Pretty Eddie. Those are the two that I was like fighting with to see like which ones would I switch out with that. Because, I mean, honestly, I'd pick those seven. Like, I enjoyed all of those movies very, very much. All mine also that I picked.
So my honorable mentions are Lips of Blood, Mirror Mirror, and Heart of Midnight.
Oh, Baba Yaga. I put that one on my honorable mention too.
I thought about it and I did like that movie.
I have with that movie, but I liked the aesthetic a lot. I appreciated that movie's aesthetic.
Yeah. But I think I sometimes lean too much. But yeah, I think Mirror Mirror and Heart of Midnight, it was hard for me to not have those on my, because they were both just like fun.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of where I leaned.
That's where I leaned,
except for Savage Land, which is scary.
Yeah.
I think, but also Body Melt, you guys.
I also, that would be an honorable mention too. I loved Body Melt.
You didn't have that on your list.
Shout out Steven for recommending that to me.
That was like maybe one of the most fun.
That was a fun watch.
I thought it was fun.
I really liked it.
Maybe too silly for me, but it was enjoyable.
I just like the Craigs in that movie.
I'm here to have fun. Yeah. But like Mirror Mirror felt like fun and silly like that too. Mm-hmm. too. So those, interesting.
And I think Poor Pretty Eddie was also like, maybe not scary, but one of the more like intense films we've watched for like many reasons. So that one like definitely deserves a shout out.
Yeah.
It also was filmed really well. Like I still think the filming style holds up.
It was, but we watched it initially and the film quality was so bad. What the deal was? We watched it on some streaming service where we couldn't really even see a lot of what was happening.
We watched it and it was better.
Yeah.
Interesting. I think it's interesting that there's not one movie that's on all three lists.
Well, we also had Spider Baby.
Had Spider Baby, but he didn't.
No, because it breaks the rules.
And he and I had Savage Land, but you didn't. Mm-hmm. You and I had Sundown.
Yes.
And he didn't. That was also just so fun.
That's why. It was just really a fun time.
That's really when I think about a gem, I think about having a good time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's hard because I've liked a lot of the movies we've seen too. Like a lot of them have genuinely been like fun and I would recommend them to people for sure.
What I think is also funny about my list is, I guess the Mafu Cage is the only movie that I picked that made my list. You guys have done a better job than me.
I think I'm just biased.
Mirror Mirror was mine too, I think, and that was on my... Yeah. But yeah. I have been more dissatisfied with my choices. That's for therapy.
We did it. We made it through 30 episodes. We did our lists. We reviewed a scary movie tonight. Now we are going to sleep for 30 days.
That's right.
Actually, no, I have to edit this episode. So
And then
we're going to go to sleep for 30 days.
So merch coming soon. It's hard when you are really resistant to using AI.
Yeah.
And you have talented friends who, we have a couple people that are going to help us with, Tom has already helped. And then my darling friend Jules is going to help. But it's like when you're on the timeline of artists that have other projects, because I'm sure we could just send this shit through fucking chat.
It's what we say is ChatGPT.
I know that Morgan has begun to call it Chad.
He does call it Chad.
A matter of time.
Yeah, I would like to have our artwork, product, whatever, be authentically made by humans. And the robots are going to come for me first because I'm saying this. But and compensate them for it. Like, these are values.
Yeah.
Shout out Nick Cage.
I also want you guys to know that I resolved to not be a bully.
Is this
upon returning?
Is this
to,
why?
Because I I don't want to be a bully anymore.
Are you talking about the dad episode?
No, I did it to Cody last week.
Oh, you did? Well, I want to set the record straight, sorry, really quick for this 30th episode about to come into my mom's defense a little bit.
Fuck you, Ryan.
She got, no, now you're making it worse. I'm now kidding. It seems like you're
you can
actually
see,
bad.
Now you can see my face, I'm kidding.
But he was bullying her the entire time, and she took the bait, which is her fault. That's but I just want fault. Anyone who was concerned and thought she was being mean to know that it was not just her. They were both being mean.
But when I'm cranky with Cody, it's my fault.
And yeah, don't do that to Cody.
No, he's a perfect angel.
You can do whatever you want. I deserve it.
No.
All right. We'll see y'all in a month. If you have any ideas about how we could promote this son of a bitch, let us know somehow. I don't know. It's only our friends that listen to this, so you
shout
probably
out
have our numbers. So.
Does anyone want to manage our fucking social
Do
media?
Do y'all want to help? I bet Hannah could.
Ugh, maybe she will, because I just hate being on there, and I don't...
I mean, I'll do it if I have to, but I know Hannah would enjoy it more than
if
I
she'd
would.
Enjoy it.
She likes doing that stuff.
Make her a hat, you know?
Oh, cool. She'd like that. Shout out, Hannah.
H dog.
Whoop. What's in that hunter book? I really enjoyed that. That was a really good show. I really enjoyed that. Come on, then. Let's go and sit down.
Dirt dogs on a gym hunt.